Hello, everyone, again, and welcome to another edition of Our Baseball Weekly. It's the weekly podcast from the baseball subreddit, and this is episode number 48. This week, we've got Naim and Dylan, who are going to go over some of the various MLB rewards that have been given out over this last week. But before that, as usual, my name's Maz. I'm here, and I'm joined by Phil this week, and we're going to talk about some of the other news from around baseball this week. Phil, how you been?
Hey, Maz, how are you? I'm good, and it's fun to be talking baseball with you again, because it's been a while.
Yeah, same here. I took last week off. Nothing wrong with that. There's other members of this crew, and I'm happy to be back. I had a fantastic week. I can't say enough, but let's not dwell on that. How was your week?
Very busy. We're gearing up for the big Thanksgiving holiday. The kids are out of school. Wife and I are finally getting to take a vacation to ourselves, so very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be fun. This is Thanksgiving week, after all. I hope if you're listening to this, maybe you're on the way to visit some family or something, or maybe you're going to work for one of the last times before you have off for a couple days. But regardless, I guess let's just jump into it. I guess one of the big things that happened this last week was the deadline for players accepting or rejecting qualifying offers. We'll talk about Michael Conforto and my feelings on that maybe if you want. But Brandon Belt was the only player this year to accept a qualifying offer. I thought was a little surprising. But yeah, Brendan returns for that $18.4 million to the Giants for one more season. Good move by Belt, right?
Well, I think we talked about this last week, Naim and Dylan and I, where Farhan made his bones with the 2021 Giants was finding guys from 2016 that were good and then, you know, turning them into superstars again in 2021. And Brandon Belt accepting the qualifying offer did not surprise me in the least bit. I think it was a good move. He was probably not going to get a better deal anywhere else. And if anything, this kind of gives him a chance to prove himself, you know, moving into the kind of the back end of his career. And he gets to stay in San Francisco where, you know, where at least it seems like he was happy. So it's a good move. As far as nobody else signing the qualifying offer, there wasn't really any surprises. I mean, other than, you know, the aforementioned Michael Conforto. What's the stat out of the last 10 or so years that the qualifying offer has been a thing that the vast majority of players have turned it down? I mean, the only one I can remember from our franchise history is in 2015, Colby Rasmus, who didn't live up to his contract, but man, he was fun to watch play.
That was a name, Colby Rasmus. I remember him.
Yeah. He looked straight out of farm country, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I guess it's normally only a couple, or if any, one or two people will accept the qualifying offer this year. But, you know, was it me and you or me and Dylan that talked about the qualifying offers a couple weeks ago?
I know we were talking. I've talked about them in the past on the show, so it may have been me.
Well, I know when I was doing that conversation, there was about 3-4 people that I thought, yeah, hey, you should probably accept it. But
Belt. Yeah, Belt was one. I think we believe Noah Syndergaard was probably going to take it on a prove it deal where, you know, he was going to get the most value out of the qualifying offer over signing with someone else. That proved to be wrong. Possibly Verlander taking the qualifying offer for the same reason as a prove it deal coming off of Tommy John, which also proved to be wrong.
See, the difference being there, though, is Noah Syndergaard hasn't pitched in 2 years, and Justin Verlander, you know, if he decided to retire, he's a Hall of Famer. So I think there's different things for people to prove.
Other than the fact that, you know, AV has said on many occasions that he means to be this generation's Nolan Ryan and pitch until he's 45. Do I think he has that in him? Nah, I think, and we'll get into it a little bit later. This is probably going to be either the last or second to last contract he signs. So yeah, maybe for all intents and purposes, bullpen session he threw in Houston, you know, he was topping out around 97, so it looks like he's still got a little bit of gas left in the tank. Maybe he ate a bunch of Taco Bell, you know, like he's known to do.
Is that a thing? Does he eat a lot of Taco Bell?
Oh, yeah. Apparently, it dates back to the time, you know, back when he was in Detroit, that his he gave an interview, I think it was on Jimmy Kimmel, right after the Astros won the World Series in 2017, that his pregame regimen is to eat a bunch of Taco Bell. Like, that's his thing. That's what he does. And
that's awesome. I like him even more.
It's bizarre, but, you know, if it works for you, it works.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll talk about JV a little bit more later. I guess kind of rounding out the qualifying offers, the bigger story, I guess, is that Syndergaard, as you mentioned, he went and rejected. I don't think he officially rejected the Mets qualifying offer, but he signed with someone else. So therefore, I guess that's a rejection, right?
What was really surprising to me in this is that after the deal breaks down, it really was comparable money to what the qualifying offer would have been in New York.
Yeah.
So it kind of just read like or wanted out, or he was just unhappy with the front office. At least, you know, not being a Mets or an Angels fan, that was my takeaway from it, that if it was about the money, he could have just kept the same amount and stayed in New York. But, you know, maybe greener pastures.
Yeah, it's been a weird week. I've kind of heard all kinds of ends of the spectrum, from people being super angry with Syndergaard or people being kind of understandable. He's going at, you know, Mike Francesa on Twitter over this last week.
Yeah, that was a great tweet, by the way.
Which, yeah, I like Mike, you know, not as a serious person, but as a, like, he's just a parody of himself at this point. Right. But it was nice to see Syndergaard kind of rip into him a little bit on his way out the door. Yeah, like you said, it's comparable money. I can't really be mad at him. And we all know that I'm this big reactionary, you're an idiot and I hate everybody kind of idea. But
oh, I never picked that up from you at all, Maz. Never.
Oh, never on the history of this podcast?
Yeah, never.
Never making these bold claims about how people are washed?
No, never.
But I can't be too mad at Syndergaard because it is an overpay. I think we can all agree that even the qualifying offer was an overpay a guy who hasn't pitched in 2 years. I guess my philosophy is just, hey, man, you get your money. Do you? You know, at least he's not going to the Yankees. He's not going to the Braves, Phillies. So I can't be too angry.
Look at it from the Angels' perspective, too. They're spending $21 million. They're spending $21 million on a pitcher for a year, which is a position of need for the Angels, you know, forever and always. It's a meme at this point that the Angels always need pitching. So if his season goes really well, then they got Thor for $21 million and it was a good signing. And if it doesn't go well for him, they're only bound to him for a year and they can move on. So it's a dice roll for an Angels team that should be in their window of contention, but just, no, they're unfortunately not.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see how it pans out for him. I mean, I like it when the Angels are good. I think it's good for baseball because I like Mike Trout and I like Shohei Ohtani a lot. I know we're in the same division as them, but, you know, I like it when the same teams in your division are good because it's good competition and it makes for good baseball. What, you know, watching a team beat up another team in the division that's terrible is just, it's boring. And yeah, winning is great, but, you know, exciting baseball is better.
Yeah, I think maybe the thing that makes it easier for me is that I guess, like, if I had to rank my teams, like, the Angels are probably, like, my number three team behind, you know, Mets, Red Sox, probably, and then, like, Angels. So, you know, Mike Trout, Shohei, Syndergaard on the same team. That should be cool. Interesting thing is that the Mets go to Anaheim this year in June as part of the Interleague. Ooh, that's going to be interesting.
Going to get some WWE style storylines there.
Yeah, I don't know what would be more interesting if Syndergaard pitches against the Mets and like DeGrom faces him, or if it's someone like Tyler McGill or, you know, David Peterson or someone lower on the totem pole and then we still win. You know, I don't know what would be funnier or more insulting to Noah, but we'll see, I guess.
Where does he slot in on that rotation, too? I mean, he's obviously behind Ohtani.
Yeah, he's got to be their number two, right?
No,
pathetic as that sounds.
I mean, they have. Oh, I feel bad for you, Angels fans. You know, well, they have Patrick Sandoval. And
right.
He's okay. And Jose Suarez and Jaime Barria and Reed Detmers. So yeah, Syndergaard, I guess, is the number two.
So a guy coming off Tommy John who's pitched two innings in the last 2 years is going to be their number two.
Good luck, okay. Angel.
I do wish him all the best, though, except when we play him. And I'm sure aside from when they play the Astros too, right?
Exactly.
Well, I guess another pitcher move that happened this last week was Jose Berrios out of Toronto signed a 7-year extension with the Blue Jays. That's pretty good.
A great sign for the Blue Jays. And I was looking into their payroll earlier this week. There was a rumor, or somebody in our Discord was talking about, well, I wonder if the Blue Jays could be a dark horse for Correa. So I was like, I wonder how much money they have. And
good question.
The funny thing is that team has a whole lot of headroom on their payroll, even after the Berrios extension. You have him and Springer taking up the majority of the Blue Jays payroll. And,
oh, yeah, I forgot Springer.
And then guys like Bo Bichette and Vladdy Jr. are not arbitration eligible. They're still in arbitration and not due for a big payday for a couple of years. So it was good to see him lock up Berrios for a while, that, you know, buying out the last couple of years of arbitration. He's a great pitcher. He's great for Toronto. And it gives them a little bit of security as far as pitching goes while they continue to build a powerhouse there.
Mm. Yeah, he did put up a pretty good year last year. I guess combined over the Twins and the Blue Jays, 3.5 ERA, 3.47 FIP. Not terrible, got some Cy Young votes. So I guess he earns that extension based off of that half year and his history as being a pretty good pitch, a solid guy for the Twins for the last 5 years, right?
Well, I mean, look at it like that. He's been an all-star twice, you know, back in 18 and 19. His career WAR is like almost 11. And that's the thing with pitching in major leagues is you can never have enough of it. And when you can get somebody he's never going to be I could be completely wrong.
Never know. He's 27. So
yeah, he's not, you know, your Scherzer, Otani, DeGrom caliber, you know, top of the rotation ace guys, but every team needs that solid, you know, dependable, reliable, everyday number two, you know, kind of guy. And that's what I think they have in Berrios, which, you know, it was a good sign. I think it was good for them.
Good signing. Not everybody's an ace. You know, you need those guys to fill out your rotation that can take the ball and give you pretty okay results every 5 days.
The guys that are going to eat up your innings.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a good signing by the Jays. And another team that made a good signing today, I guess, is the Brewers, who signed Pedro Severino to a 1-year, $1.9 million deal. He's in Milwaukee after being a Oriole and a National for the past 6 years. Not a great offensive catcher, but pretty solid defensively.
I'm all about the poor offensive, fantastic defensive catchers. Something I have quite a bit of knowledge about.
But yeah, it's not everybody's an ace, not everybody's a superstar. But this is another transaction that it's like, okay, all right, good, sure. What team wouldn't take Pedro Severino as their catcher, right?
Well, is he going to start or is he going to be the backup? You know, what's that going to shake out?
I'm not too sure because who was the Brewers catcher this year? Omar Navarez. That's right.
Navarez is serving. I'm going to guess that Omar Navarez is probably going to be the starter. He looks better on paper offensively by quite a bit over Severino. So yeah, I'm going to assume based on the money they spent that Severino was probably a depth signing.
Yeah. But, you know, as I mentioned before, not everybody's a superstar. Not everybody is an ace. It's, you know, you need to round out the rest of your roster. And that's
guys.
It's good. Yeah, I'd take it, especially for a 28-year-old. Still got a bit of an upside, you'd think.
Yeah, especially as a catcher.
Yeah. Well, another move out of the National League Central was the Pirates this week agreed to a deal with left-hander Jose Quintana. According to Robert Murray of Fanside and MLB Network's John Heyman, they had the details that it's a one-year major league contract, around $2 million for the year. Gosh, Quintana was a guy I feel like was going to be like an ace in Chicago for like the next decade. And now, here he is signing one-year deals with the Pirates.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be part of that whole part of the big the White Sox resurgence. You know, when they started really putting together the roster, their postseason caliber roster that they've had for the last 2 years, that Quintana was going to be a big part of that, and he most certainly has not been.
Yeah, I kind of remember back in like 2014, like when the White Sox first signed Jose Abreu, and they were like the spooky good young team of, oh my gosh, look at all these guys that the White Sox have. And I always remember Jose Quintana being like, this is the year, he's figuring it out. Oh my gosh. And, you know, he did get Cy Young votes in 2016, but he was never that guy that everyone thought he was going to be.
No, and this past year, split between being an Angel and a Giant, he's been a guy.
Yeah, he's just a guy. I mean, unfortunately, you know, getting between now and when the CBA happens, we're not going to see those big time signings. So, you know, we got to talk about Jose Berrios and Jose Quintana, unfortunately.
if you are in the major leagues, then you are obviously a good baseball player. So,
yeah,
at least they can go to sleep doing that.
You know who is a good baseball player? Justin Verlander. He's a good player. Good pitcher. Let's talk about his one-year, $25 million signing with the Houston Astros.
So it's a one-year, $25 million contract with a second year being a player option, also for $25 million.
Oh, yes, he's got I forgot the player option. I turned into the Yankees for a second, who apparently offered him the same deal but didn't want to give him that option. So my mistake. I'm sorry.
Hey, I will always take an opportunity to throw shade at Yankees fans. It's so enjoyable. As somebody who's been a Justin Verlander fan since he broke into the majors back in 2006, you know, as I split my allegiances between the Astros and the Tigers, I was really, really happy to see him re-sign. I am in the belief that he still has a lot in the tank. I hope, hopefully, his new robot forearm will serve him well throughout the year. The Astros, what they were lacking this year as far as pitching is concerned, is sort of that, you know, the older gunslinger ace pitcher, maybe that we thought we were going to get from Zach Greinke, but you know, Greinke, you know, just didn't seem to have very much left in the gas tank.
Yeah, Greinke's just not that guy. He's
cerebral.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that ain't him. I think he'd be the first person to tell you that it's not him.
No, and Verlander very much profiles as your alpha starting pitcher, which we absolutely needed. You know, with our pitching rotation being so young, one thing we were lacking, I think, was that, you know, veteran presence that's been there and done that. And I guess between need for that pitcher and then, you know, Verlander's solid relationship with Jim Crane, they were able to get a deal done, and I'm really happy with that. We didn't have to give up a draft pick.
Yeah, that's really great. I guess I'm fine with it as well. I love Justin Verlander as well. One of my favorite pitchers, period. You know, and I was hoping to see him go back to Detroit. If he wasn't going to go there, I'm glad that he stayed with the Astros. Like, better than him being a Yankee or even him being an Angel or a Red Sox or just Ranger, you know, somewhere else. It would have been weird.
The way I see this deal playing out is it's a win-win for Verlander. If he pitches really well, in 2022. He has that opt out, and then he can go sign one last big contract.
Ooh, that's right. Yeah.
He doesn't pitch well. Well, then he's got that player option for 2023, and he's going to get paid anyway.
Come back and try it again, maybe. Yeah,
exactly. You know, he's 39. He'll turn 40 over the course of the season. Maybe this may be, you know, Verlander's last ride. And I'm glad I get to be here for it and get to watch it. I just hope it pans out really well. And he goes out on top and doesn't end his career being terrible and injured. So
yeah, same here. I hope he goes out on top. I hope he puts together another really excellent season or two or three, you know, however long he decides, because seeing any kind of great go out and just fall apart at the end of their career is always really hard to watch.
Yeah, and especially for me, you know, because I've been a fan of his for 15 years and I've watched him his whole career, so you know, as a fellow old guy like Verlander is, you know, it's kind of, this has been my entire adult life has been watching Justin Verlander pitch, so I'm glad I get to see him continue to play for a team that I root for. Let's just hope that he ends it on a high note.
Yeah. Well, as we did allude to a little bit, I guess kind of a major point here is that the Yankees were in on him evidently, and they only offered him that 1 year deal. I guess it bears mentioning because the Yankees need starting pitching, and because adding Verlander to their team would have been incredible. I mean, but I guess the main point is I've seen so many Yankee fans online be angry because it's like, we lost out because of money. How dare we? What's your take on that?
So, as somebody who's been watching the Carlos Correa free agency drama unfold, you know, day there's a new article coming out. Oh, this team's not committed to spending $300 million. This team is in on him. And I've been reading far more than I have ever wanted to about Yankees financials. At least the opinion I've seen from the New York Post and some of the fan blogs around the Yankees is that the Steinbrenner family is looking to rein in the spending a bit and not go out and plunk down a bunch of money on a guy who wants $300 million. So maybe there's where there's smoke, there's fire, and they're looking to kind of restructure so they can keep, you know, an Aaron Judge as he comes up, you know, for his big payday. Or
right, yeah.
You know, what are they gonna do?
Yeah, I don't know. I understand what Cashman would have to work with if, you know, they're gonna reel back the spending a little bit, but I can't imagine. It's not right. I just can't imagine being a Yankee fan and thinking how dare we get outbid for a guy, or how dare we not be committed to spending X amount of millions of dollars every year. I don't know.
You want to hear my lone gunman conspiracy theory is that Verlander had never intended on signing anywhere else other than Houston. He wanted to stay here because of his close relationship with Jim Crane, that he was using the I prefer to play for a West Coast team. I want to play for a team that does spring training in Florida, was just to drive up to get that second player option year. I don't think he was going to go anywhere else.
I do often wonder how many times players do that, because Max Scherzer has said the same thing, that he's not going to go to the Mets and he's not going to go to the Yankees. But is he just saying that? I don't, because those are two teams that have the money to spend. I wonder how many times they do that. I really do.
Oh, it's all marketing 101. It's, you use the media to drive up your value or your perceived value. You know, there's FOMO, you know, involved even in signing free agents. If, well, he's generational talent, we have to go get him. We have the spending space. Well, if I'm Max Scherzer and I want to pitch in LA, because from what I understand, you know, California team is his intended destination. And if he wants to pitch for the Angels, then of course he's going to say, well, you know, I kind of want to play for a West Coast team. And then that drives up his asking price. You get the Dodgers and the Angels into a bidding war.
Yeah. Which I guess the Dodgers would win 9 times out of 10.
That's obvious.
But yeah, it's just interesting. Like you said, it's marketing, it's mind games, it's building up your own stock. It's fascinating. It really is.
Yeah, it's really as tiring as watching free agency is. It's also kind of awesome to see. There's a lot of there. Of course, Twitter being the worst website ever invented.
Great.
You get to see. I don't know if this got talked about last week, but there was a picture that made the rounds on Twitter of AJ Hinch and Carlos Correa having lunch together in Houston.
I did see that. Yep.
Of course, that was the picture that launched 1,000 hot takes. Oh well, you know, he's having lunch in Houston. He's signing with the Tigers. But it looks like they're breaking up. So obviously, he's staying in Houston. You know, so much conjecture around a single statement made in the media or a picture that, you know, kind of fuels all these rumors. And it's kind of it sucks, but it's also fun to kind of watch how it, you know, it spreads and see how it goes at the same time. So that's kind of the, you know, it's hot stove season. That's what makes baseball fun when, you know, there's no baseball going on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It is mildly fun to sit back and watch all this. I must say that. I guess the last piece of news before we turn things over to Dylan and Naim is that we've got a bit of positive news out of Seattle. I know last week we had talked about Ken Griffey Jr. Being part owner, you're buying an ownership stake in the Seattle Mariners. It was 2 weeks ago. I'm sorry. I believe we talked about that. But this week, we've got another legend from the early 2000s Seattle Mariners. Ichiro is apparently going to be going into the Mariner Hall of Fame this year. He will join Griffey. He will join Edgar Martinez in that Hall of Fame. Is there a number retirement going along with this? I'm not sure.
I would absolutely expect there to be.
Yeah, same here. I was going to say, because then he joins their number up there on their retired numbers as well, which I believe them, the two of them, and then Randy Johnson are the only retired numbers in Seattle right now.
Well, as a kid who I spent the majority of my baseball formative years were the late 80s, early 90s. And then, you know, I reached adulthood towards the end of the 90s and beginning of the 2000s. So when I think of the Mariners, the two names that instantly come to mind, obviously, are Ken Griffey Jr. and Ichiro Suzuki. And I love watching Ichiro. Just that, you know, he has that very Japanese slap hit style of hitting that was just so awesome to watch.
Yeah, he was I loved him as a kid as well. I'm kind of right there with you. It was all about, you know, Griffey, Ichiro, Randy Johnson, whose number is not retired by the Mariners. I want to correct that. I'm sorry. It's just Edgar, Griffey, and now potentially Ichiro as well. So yeah, I'm right there with you. A-Rod as well, you know, a little bit more in the late 90s. But I mean, what can you say about Ichiro that hasn't been said?
He's awesome, and apparently he's hilarious. So all of the interesting stories I've read about Ichiro just kind of build upon his legend. And it's great for the Mariners. It's great for Ichiro. He's a legend, and glad to see him finally getting some recognition.
Yeah, same here. He's going to be eligible for the Hall of Fame in 2 years. He's eligible on the 2024 ballot. So, you know, I guess it's kind of a foregone conclusion that he's going to get in the Hall of Fame. I mean, of course. So I guess they figured they'll get ahead of it and put him in the Mariner one first.
Right. Do you see Ichiro going in as a first ballot, or do you think it takes a couple years?
I don't know how you don't put him in as a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's got 3,000 hits in America. You know, put that with his Japanese accomplishments as well, which they're supposed to, you know, include their overseas accomplishments as well. I don't know how you don't put him in on the first ballot.
I 100% agree. I think absolutely a first ballot Hall of Famer. And if he's not, then Baseball Writers of America, fucking up. You can edit that out.
Absolutely. There you go. Actually, double checking that, he's going to be on the 2025 ballot. So sorry about that. But yeah, 2025 is going to be his first year. It's also going to be the first year for, you know, a couple of other Hall of Fame potential people. We got CC Sabathia, fellow Mariner legend Felix Hernandez. I don't know. That should be interesting, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and then Petey from the Red Sox, Dustin Pedroia.
Mm-hmm. And Fernando Rodney, the old journeyman closer.
Fernando Rodney experience.
You got Curtis Granderson as well, Troy Tulowitzki,
who I it's it, it's a shame to see him get felled down so short in his career, because I love watching Tulo.
Yeah, same here. But I think looking at that 2025 ballot, it's got to be Ichiro, probably CC, and then, you know, maybe some holdovers from the previous year. But yeah, he's got to be there. In book your tickets now for the 2025 Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Ichiro will be there. I can tell you.
Cooperstown. Cooperstown is amazing.
I have. I actually went for the Griffey and Piazza induction a handful of years ago. So, yeah, very good time.
Yeah, I grew up not too far from Cooperstown and got a chance to go quite a few times in my youth. And it did nothing but solidify my love for baseball. So if you get the chance to go, by all means, please do. It's awesome.
Yeah, if you're listening and you've never been to Cooperstown, go. Yeah, I don't think we could both say it enough.
100% go.
Well, Phil, thanks so much for joining me. Thanks for talking about a litany of things over this last week.
Yeah, it's always fun, Maz. Glad we got to record together. And I love talking scattershot baseball. So, yeah, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, same here. I hope you have a good Thanksgiving.
You too. Enjoy enjoy your vacation week, hopefully. Otherwise, yeah.
Thanks.
Eat some turkey.
Yeah, you too. Well, everyone, I guess stay tuned after this break, because we've got Naim and Dylan coming at you. They're going to recap all the awards that were handed out over the last week and tell you what they think. So stay tuned.
All right, welcome back. I am Naim. I'm here to talk about the awards that were handed out this week, along with Dylan. How's it going, Dylan?
Not doing too bad.
We broke up the trio finally me and Phil. Phil was in the intro this week with Maz, but you know, we got to shake things up a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, got to stir the pot.
So we talked about a handful of the awards last week. I think that was a longer segment because we talked about each individual Silver Slugger and Gold Glove. Probably going to be a little bit shorter this week, although who knows? We might end up having a lot to talk about. But this week was handed out Manager of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, and MVP. So that's the order that we're going to go in. Let's start, I guess, with Manager of the Year. And I guess neither was a big surprise, but the... I guess more obvious one to me feels like Kevin Cash for the Rays. Do you agree
I actually think Kapler was like a. Like,
I think Kapler
like
was. Kapler yeah, I guess by the end of the year, like, Kapler was obvious, but like I feel like Kapler earned it. I'm not saying Kapler didn't earn it. I think that was like, all right, very, very clearly this team was not supposed to be nearly as good as it was.
I would probably make the case for Kapler being the most obvious because of that, like, yeah, like expectations versus reality, and like they were like the best team, like, right, like the best team in baseball in the regular
season.
They were supposed
to be like a 73 win team,
like
a 107 win team.
The magical formula for like what, you know, coach of the year should be. And Cash, obviously, like, you could give the Rays credit on this end every year, but I think I probably would have gone Cervais from the Mariners just for that same reason of, like, no one expected the Mariners to do anything. Like, they didn't have a – it's not like the Mariners had a ton of talent. Like, he was really – they were managing through a lot of, like, not playoff caliber players and nearly did it, you know? And, like, while they didn't make the playoffs, like – 88 wins or whatever they ended up with for that team and what they went through is pretty outstanding. Especially
they ended up with 90, like, actually.
Yeah, and like, you know, like I said, like, I mean, they had their best prospects come up and just totally suck, like Kelnick, you know, and then like,
yeah,
and they had their run differential was like really low. It's like really bad.
Yeah, that was the thing, right? That's such the weird thing about the Mariners is that, like,
yeah.
On paper, the team was not good. So I guess you're right that maybe then how much like, of a, how important was the manager there? Yeah.
Yeah. So it means like if you're not going to like credit, like Paul Sewald was really cool and like, but you're not going to get many individual honors out of this. So like if you have to credit someone, I think it goes back to the main situation.
That's true.
If I had a vote, which I don't, I never will, probably, hopefully not, but
hopefully.
That'd be cool if I did, but I don't expect it. So. But I would have done that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But, you know, like it does just feel like you kind of at the beginning of the season just pencil in whoever's at the Rays and then figure out what happens afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, like Kevin Cash, and they're basically like, they're going to finish. Like, you had to, like, place prop bets. It's like, whoever's managing the Rays is going to finish top three, and whoever's general manager of the Rays is probably going to finish top three in whatever it is they do. So,
yeah,
like, you know, executive of the year and whatever else. So, like,
is the first AL manager to win consecutive seasons. The only other manager to do it was Bobby Cox with the Braves in 2004 and 2005.
Yeah. I mean, kind of not similar the way the teams were run, but similar in the sense of just consistent success and consistent, you know, prestige from that position. Yeah. So I'll be curious to see, you know, how good things seem to come to an end at some point at the Rays. I wonder if that applies to manager.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. It does feel like they can just sort of plug and play anybody there.
Right.
Although, I mean, like, Cash is good, and Joe Madden before him was a good manager.
I like Joe Madden there and with the Cubs and stuff. So I'm curious if they just get priced out at some point. Or, you know, like, managers, like, I think a lot of them don't that much. But if they get, maybe if they got caught in this Montreal situation, it's there much longer.
Also receiving votes in the AL, Scott Servais, like you said, he finished second. Dusty Baker finished third, and then Charlie Montoyo, Alex Cora, Tony La Russa, AJ Hinch with 3 third place votes.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds, the top group at least sounds right.
Yeah, I can see giving Hinch a courtesy third place vote because the Tigers also defined. Better than you expected.
Yeah, like,
you know,
they were like the crappier Mariners, you know. Like, they were not good, but probably won a few games because of some smart, you know, decisions.
In the National League, like I said, Kapler won. Council finished in second place. Mike Schilt, recently fired, finished in third place.
Congratulations.
And then Brian Snicker and Dave Roberts. Schilt got a single first place vote as well.
My God.
Which is...
From who? Those are the St. Louis
from
writer. You
Mitch Stacy of the Associated Press, Cincinnati writer. Who also did not give Kapler a vote. Their ballot was Schilt, Council, Snitker.
Listen, man, I hated Gabe. I thought Gabe Kapler was like the biggest idiot on earth when he was the Phillies manager. Like he would just pull the dumbest, like, Bush League dumb things just constantly over and over because they were trying to subject themselves to this kind of sabermetric point of view and had no idea how to do it, you know, because that's the Phillies. And then he goes over to Giants, like, you know, like, I think more credit needs to be given to the front office. I don't think Gabe Kapler is, like, just turned into some visionary, but I think he's able to, like, clearly he's a good clubhouse guy for them. And then, like, so, like, again, someone has to get credit when everyone on your team is, like, 20% better than they should have been. At least,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely,
I mean? So, like,
yeah,
because, you know,
like,
so.
we're gonna talk about it in a bit, but, like, the number of Giants who got, you know, Cy Young and MVP votes in a season where, like, again, they were good, but were not expected to be any good. Like,
he really,
who knows what got all those pieces together. I'm sure part of it was also just all the teams, you know, everybody started clicking and they were like, all right, well, if we're clicking, we're all going to click, you know, but,
So, I mean, explain the Mike Schilt thing though. Like if, say they didn't win 17 games in a row, like, he probably would have been fired and everyone would have expected it. Obviously he was fired and people were like, well, that's pretty weird, but, like, I don't think Mike Schilt was ever, like, renowned for much, you know, like, I don't know, like, that's,
yeah, I mean,
it seems strange, all the respect he got in a season where it's like they got lucky for 2 weeks, you know.
He's a good manager. Like, they were also unlucky for 2 weeks. If you take out the worst 2 weeks and the best 2 weeks and just look at that record, they were still a playoff team. Like, they were just really bad in June and really good in September. So that's why you play 162 games, right?
Yeah.
But, like, he was manager of the year in 2019. I think he was a good manager. Obviously, they had a really, really rough June and a really, really good August, September.
Yeah.
But, I you're right. He probably wouldn't have gotten votes if they hadn't rattled off those 17 wins in a row. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was still a little surprised. Like, even if they hadn't won those 17 in a row, I still would have been a little surprised by the firing. Because even without that win streak, they were still in contention, like, before
like
the win streak came.
But, like, it was like Tyler O'Neill deciding to be you know, like Mookie Betts. I don't know. There's a lot going on there that I'm like, I probably would have gone Snitker because of how jacked up that team was because of injuries and stuff, and being able to throw together a playoff push, you know, like, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, it's a little similar, but I think he had more work to do as far as like daily management of a lot of different moving
yeah,
pieces.
And I mean, we've talked about it before, you know? When we talked about the Braves, is that like, you know, yeah. they had a completely different outfield in the second half than they did in the first half.
Yeah,
like the four outfielders who played in the playoffs were not Braves in the first half of the season.
And obviously this is not a knock against the Cardinals, right? But they also like were never really in serious contention against the Brewers, you know what I mean? Whereas the Braves were in a playoff race, like a division race for like 3 months, you know, or whatever. So like, that's not like a real knock or a pro. It's just like the Cardinals did really well. They got a wild card spot and got spanked.
That is true, but the Cardinals also won more games than the Braves. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, obviously, yeah, like, you know, the contention thing, but like, you know, they still won more games just because the NL East was a weaker division.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's just tough with manager of the year, because it's like, how do you gauge how someone did?
It is very tough to gauge what a manager did to make your team good or not. So let's move on to rookie of the year. So I think this was, I guess, a little bit tougher in the AL, but maybe just because I don't watch as much AL baseball. The NL, I think, was pretty straightforwardly Jonathan India.
India seemed the best by a decent amount. I mean, they got good. There's good players, right? Like, I think Ian Anderson and Trevor Rogers could be as good long term as Jonathan India. Like, I really like those guys. Obviously, Dylan Carlson just seems like a guy that's kind of decent at everything, which is a solid thing to be. You know what I mean? I was wondering if Frank Schwindel would be able to get himself into the conversation just from hitting home runs every other day, you know, for like two months.
Yeah, he picked up a couple votes.
Yeah.
Sort of Patrick Wisdom doing the same thing, basically. But yeah.
But I think India, like, the on-base thing is legit. The dude's a good fielder. He just seems like a really well-rounded kind of player. He seems like a Dansby Swanson, like, plug him and play. Like, he's not going to be, you know, like, he's probably a little bit better than Dansby just overall, obviously, winning Rookie of the Year. But, like, that kind of, like, can do a little bit of everything very well. And, you know, you know, I think he's a really good piece for them. And I didn't expect it either. You know, his minor league stuff wasn't really that crazy, but he has a little more power than I thought he did.
Yeah. Another pretty straightforward set of ballots here was, you know, just mostly India, Rogers, Carlson, some India, Carlson, Rogers, and then Dan Zimborski with Rogers, India, Sundell, which is...
I mean, like, you know, like, I'm actually surprised India had so much support. Like, you know, typically if, like, the counting stats weren't like insane or anything. Trevor Rogers was like definitely the best for like a while, but then he got hurt, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
I can understand. I think the case there, I didn't read any stories or anything he wrote, but I think the case is there is that a young possible number two kind of starter is probably more valuable just in that situation. And the way Trevor Rogers did it was really, really impressive. So like, if there was anyone else to vote for, it was Trevor Rogers. I think it's a little bit safer with India, but I'm honestly surprised
Rogers terrible at predicting how pitchers are going to there's so many pitchers who have like a really good rookie season and then completely fall off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Shelby Miller was kind of like that. He was pretty good for a year or two and then just gone, you know? So
yeah. But, like, with Rodgers, it's, like, 130 innings, 2.64 ERA, 2.55 FIP, struck out at more than 10 per 9, walked not, you know, like, little amount, but not too much, didn't give up many hits or home runs, like, couldn't ask for much more, you know. And Ian Anderson was kind of similar, but just a little more wild and I think was hurt for long. So, two impressive pitchers, but I'm fine with India.
And then the American League Rookie of the Year was Randy Arozarena, who I'm sure surprised a couple of people by still being a rookie, considering like how much he has played in the last couple of years.
And then he was Rookie of the Year. Yeah. I think that was a tough one. None of these guys really stood out a ton. Like, it's hard to go. Like, I think he did well. I still don't know what he really is. You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of a confusing player. He's obviously got massive upside, but
he is very odd. It was one of those things where, like, you know, obviously he was a Cardinal initially, and the Cardinals traded him to the Rays, and it's such a weird, like, you know, part of me wants to be like, I wish we still had Randy Rosarena, but the other part's like, well, if the Randy Rosarena was still on the Cardinals, he still would be fourth on the depth chart behind O'Neill and Bader and Carlson, whether he deserved to be or not. Like, that's just the way that you would value that kind of person.
I think he was definitely the best of them. So I think this is the right choice. But I think if Wander didn't have that injury, like, right at the end of the season, I think he would have won it. Because I think there's an element of this. Like, I think I was kind of mentioned before, the Trevor Rogers. Like, I think he's more, if he is this long term, he is probably more valuable than, like, a good second baseman. Like, in the same way that I think if Wander is, like, this good, and even if he played fewer games and stuff, like, he played shortstop, he was almost, and this is only 70 games, but, you know, 810 OPS, he had that really extended long on-base streak. You know, I think if he plays 10, 15 more games, I think people are just like, let's just
he only played 70 games, so even 10 more games is still half a season, you know?
Like, half a season, and he's amazing, like, you know, and he started off slow and just, like, really, like, the finish of that stat line after how he started is, like, he was really, he was the best player on the best team in the American League, like, for, like, 2 months. You know what I mean?
I don't know how, and, like, I completely missed that Brandon Lau hit 39 home runs. Like,
yeah, Brandon Lau was had talking, a very
there were so many other like home run massive hitters in the American League that we just, like, ignored Brandon Lau.
Brandon Lau is just consistently, like, that dude hits the Christ out of the ball, and I can't explain much else. But, like, Wander, when he was at his peak, was the best player in the Rays, and that's a 20-year-old. You know, it's like,
That's true. I think
another couple weeks he would have gotten.
Rookie, there's such a weird award, because, like, part of it is, like, you're kind of hoping to predict who's going to be good in the future, and, like, part of it's just like now we're just seeing who's good now, because you just there's so many people who you're just not gonna know, right? Like. And also, Wander Franco at 20 years old being that good, like, you're right. He's probably going to be an MVP in a year, if not two or three.
It's going to be pretty damn fast. But, you know, if you think of it the same way, if we did the same thing with Adolis, if we took Adolis Garcia's first 70 games, it would look a lot different than his 140 or whatever he played. So, I understand.
Another former Cardinal, Adolis Garcia.
That one's probably a little bit more valid.
That one's a lot more palatable, for sure.
You do wonder if the Cardinals handled the situation well.
I mean, that is true. However, on the other hand, like, Tyler O'Neill was really, really good this year. Harrison Bader was really good this year.
True.
Dylan Carlson was pretty good.
Based on our other activities, their time is running out kind of fast compared to, like, Bader's had consistent playing time, but O'Neill has not, and he's halfway through his basically rookie contract. So, you know, I think it's not the most efficient use of talent in the Cardinals, but, you know, having a couple great outfielders is good. So, whatever.
Let's move on to the Cy Young Awards. Here we'll start with the AL, because that one was the least contentious. Robbie Ray with 29 first place votes and 1 second place vote. Garrett Cole with 29 second place votes and 1 first place vote. And then a gaggle of other people.
Yeah.
Cole first place vote was from Jason Beck of MLB.com, a Tigers writer. Went with Cole first, Ray second. Everybody else, Ray Cole.
Dissing
and then
former Detroit Tiger Robbie Ray.
Detroit Tigers legend, the Robbie fifth Ray. Member of the 2014 Detroit Tigers to get a Cy Young Award.
God, I just can't believe that season happened. It's one of the most
shocking. Poor team, man. Like that, those early mid 2010s Tigers that were all really good at hitting and really good at pitching and just had good at starting pitching.
A very specific kind of pitching, but just imagine if Drew Smyly wins a Cy Young. It'll just be like, this sucks. Big Cy Young winners on that team.
Ray is like, what a Yeah.
Ray is such a weird number one guy that he's going to win the Cy Young. He won the Cy Young. And like, if he's like totally crappy next year, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, he's the number one guy. It's like, this cannot be just permanent. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
I just don't buy it for a second, but I respect the guy for having an amazing.
And I think we've talked about it before that just like the walks kind of went away. Yeah. It's like
everything got better at once, which is a very odd. You know, usually it's more incremental.
Well, you know, because the strikeouts stayed the same, right? He's always been able to strike out a lot of guys.
Right.
Like that's the thing that he does. He just also walks a lot, and you know, like. But like, because his strikeouts were in line with his career numbers, strikeouts per nine, his home runs per nine in line with his career numbers, hits per nine a little bit better than his career numbers, but not like, you know, it's one hit per nine better. But his walks per nine was 2.4 compared to 3.9 for his career.
And he pitched obviously way more innings than he ever has, so that strikeout number looks a little bit better than it normally does. I totally forgot about this. I'm sure you've seen it at some point. Did you realize that Robbie Ray is currently the all-time record, all-time in baseball history for K9?
For strikeouts per nine, yeah. I did. Like, I think either we talked about it recently or I heard somebody on the show talking about it. It's like, Robbie Ray, really?
Because I think Darvish had it before him, which is like, okay, Darvish makes sense. Like, you know, Darvish is that kind of guy. Like, he's been doing it for longer. But like, Robbie Ray, man.
Not much longer, right? Darvish was a rookie in what, 2012, and Ray was in 2014.
He's been more like relevant, right?
Yeah, but he's been consistently better, like good pitcher for a long time.
Like, I think he's maybe been around for like one more year or so, but pretty similar as far as total production and as far as years. But yeah, Robbie Ray, shout out, good job,
Robbie Ray, Cy Young winner. I mean,
strange,
good for Robbie Ray. Who
we are
going to at some point talk about our offseason sim on the podcast. I know that's a topic
very relevant
been,
to the Robbie Ray discussion.
It's been discussed for coming, and in our last season, so Dylan and I, along with a bunch of other people, participate in a offseason simulation where we do trades and stuff. I'm sure you've seen stuff like this on Reddit before and on SB Nation and stuff like that. But yeah, Robbie Ray went unsigned in the simulation last year.
Was not on a team in 2021, as far as
not on a team in 2021 in our sim, won the Cy Young Award. So clearly, we're idiots.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, yeah. Oh no, we knew that. We'll all agree with that for sure.
last thought on that: Gerrit Cole, very good season. Just had a couple blow up starts right at the end of the season that really screwed him. And I think he would have been a lot better off if he had. Just like I said, it was just so good. Minus those couple.
He's also kind of the face of the spider tack crackdown.
Yeah, for I don't know if that's necessarily super fair.
I'm not sure it is. Yeah, but
you know, like really good. Like, you don't have to question if he's a really good pitcher. You know, I'm sure he'll be like. Strikeout all time leader or some shit.
I would certainly rather have Gerrit Cole on the. Insane contract he is currently on than Robbie Ray on the insane contract
he's about to get. Yeah, I think even if it's double the amount, I'd rather have Gerrit Cole. But
yeah,
whatever.
All right, National League Cy Young was a little bit more of a race. So Corbin Burnes is the Cy Young winner in the National League, but Zach Wheeler got the same amount of first place votes. He just got fewer second place votes. And then he got more third, fourth, and fifth place votes. But 151 points for Corbin Burnes, 141 points for Zach Wheeler. Very, very tight.
This one was,
and then Max Scherzer a little bit further behind in third place. I would have given it to Scherzer. I would have given my first place vote to Scherzer personally if I had a first place vote.
Oh, really? You would have given it to Scherzer?
I think so.
I think he was definitely deserving. But I think at a certain point, it's like comes down to a certain like I don't know. This is really tricky. I think I would have voted for Burnes just because, like, I think I value, like, you know, yeah, you might not have gotten, you might not have gotten as many innings as Zach, but like, you thrived way more in the inning pitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, in the current era of baseball, I think that's fine. I think Wheeler got those innings because the Phillies were just so desperate to not go to their bullpen, which is not a knock against him. Like, it ended up hurting his, I think, numbers a little bit more. But Wheeler, you know, Wheeler was frightening to face, like, as a Braves fan, you know what I mean? Like, he really he really had an impressive season. And I think there is value to like how many innings that man pitched compared to everyone else in baseball. You know, he had kind of that like,
yeah,
classic kind of season.
That certainly, I probably would have gone Scherzer, Wheeler, Burns. Scherzer did pitch a lot fewer innings than Wheeler. I think both.
I mean, everyone. I think Scherzer might have pitched more than Burns because Burns was only around like 170, 180, something like that.
Yeah, it was 167. I thought Scherzer pitched something weirdly low, like 130, but maybe that was just with the. Oh, no, 179. Okay.
Yeah,
so Scherzer pitched more than Burns. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. Wheeler pitched some 213 innings like in this era, you know, like three complete games.
Anyone that's getting 200 innings deserves a lot of respect just for even reaching that, much less succeeding.
Yeah, my ballot probably would have been Scherzer, Wheeler, Burns. Mm-hmm. Again, not that you can necessarily go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bunch of great pitchers. Like, how can you go wrong with
Jake DeGrom.
man.
One single fifth place courtesy vote, presumably from an Arizona writer. So,
we as a society were robbed of the greatest pitching season ever. So I'm glad he showed up on the list, even though I wouldn't probably have had him there.
And I would be remiss if I did not mention Adam Wainwright's 3 fifth place votes. Including one from a Pittsburgh writer, the other two from St. Louis writers, unsurprisingly. But he had, Wainwright got down ballot Cy Young votes, where, like I knew he was going to get. He was really, really good this year. Like, what a shock for a 40-year-old. Very excited for Adam Wainwright.
Yeah, this was just a loaded ballot. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people like Max Fried and Marcus Stroman, I think, are two guys that like, you could make serious contention that they were some of the strongest pitchers down the stretch. And, you know, Max just had kind of a rough start. And I think Stroman is just, you know, kind of like Stroman's not like a big strikeout guy, you know, so it's kind of a little uneven on that end. But both of them are perfectly deserving of votes in a normal year. But, you know, obviously, I think the pitchers had kind of the upper hand coming back from the short season early on. Obviously, I think some of that faded a little bit. But if you remember early on, I think scoring was a little bit low. So I think a lot of guys were just able to put together some really fantastic years. Like Walker Buehler being fourth on this list is insane. You know what I mean? Like Walker Buehler is so good. So
I was also a little surprised by the 3 fifth place votes for Julio Urias, who like was good.
That's wins, you know.
20 wins. Like, yeah. So it's like, oh, he won 20 games. That's right. Yeah. Okay. I mean, so it's like,
I really like Julio Urias. I think he is in this group. Like he's in that same group, like Fried and Stroman and Wainwright. That are like, yeah, like they're not gonna win, but like they're really good.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's whatever. It's down ballot. It's like
down ballot. Yeah, yeah. Once you get to fourth and fifth,
you could ignore the wins. He had a really nice season.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He was good. He was good for sure. Absolutely. All right, and then moving on to the cream of the crop, the MVP. Let's again the unanimous winner of the American League MVP was Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
No real surprise there. He was
God. I was just so nervous that people were gonna ignite some debate about Vlad or blah blah blah. It's like, oh my god, just like,
I mean, you know, I'm sure there's one
the
somewhere
season we've had to watch in so long, you know.
There was also the Vlad Guerrero Jr. with second place and then third place Marcus Semien. There was the single Kansas City voter who put Salvador Perez in second place.
Yeah, that was awesome. I love that.
Which, you know what?
It didn't change anything, so screw it.
yeah. But, like, I don't know. It would have been a little neat for Guerrero to have a unanimous second place, you know? But, like, it doesn't actually change anything. Because he did, the Kansas City voter did vote for Guerrero third.
Two notes. One, I'm looking at the BBWA page, and Shohei Ohtani's 31st place votes add up to 420 points.
Lays it.
So that's really nice. And then second, there's a more serious. If Ohtani had the same season he did, Vlad had the same season he did, but the Blue Jays got into the playoffs, they won one extra game, do you think Vlad steals first place votes from Ohtani?
Steals first place votes. Okay.
Yeah, not first. I don't think anyone's.
I would say Ohtani, yes. I would say he would steal a couple of first place votes.
I think so too, which is I think is just a narrative thing. But I'm I think that helped us avoid that situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I love Vlad. He's so fun. But let's honor, you know, this is, like, I hate to say it, it's very unlikely to happen this well again with Ohtani. Like, just, yeah, this is a lot of things going right at one time.
Hopefully, I mean, like, honestly, you know, fact of the really matter cool is, like, even if he hadn't pitched, he would already have a case for MVP. And the fact that he also did pitch, you know, 130 innings or whatever.
Sixth on this list without pitching. And he was, like, a top 10 pitcher in the mirror. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Also getting votes, Marcus Semien, like I think I said, third place, Aaron Judge finishing fourth, Carlos Correa in fifth, then Jose Ramirez, Salvador Perez, Matt Olson, Cedric Mullins, who I think we talked about last week. Great season, good for Cedric Mullins. Brandon Lau, who we talked about a little bit earlier, Devers, Bichette, Bogarts, Abreu,
Mike Zunino.
Yeah. Mitch Haniger with a single 10th place vote, Austin Meadows with a single 10th place, Kyle Tucker.
Love Mike Zunino, MVP getter. I mean, Mitch Haniger
better.
Mitch Haniger's pretty fun. But, like, he hit, like, 40 home runs. So, it's, like, Mike sure. Did Mike Zunino hit, let's, you don't have his stats up, do you?
I can have them up in a second. Did Mike Zunino even cross the Mendoza diagonal?
I was going to say, that's what I was going to look up right now.
He hit 216. He had 216 this year. So, he did. He just cleared it.
I'm gonna pull up Mike Zunino's splits because that's my favorite thing in the world.
So he has 216, 301, 559 with 33 home runs. I mean, it was his best year, you know. Like,
and then
he was
he's also if the Rays are keeping him, then they clearly value his defense because
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Oh my God, here we go. All right, give me play a game. Platoon splits. Give me his OPS versus righties and his OPS versus lefties.
All right. Let's see. I would say. Is it a standard platoon split? Because he's a right-handed batter. So he.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would say it's like 180 versus lefties and 70 versus righties.
Oh, so you're doing what, OPS? Just give me OPS, like, straight up OPS.
Oh, OPS, straight OPS, sorry. Let's say it's, like, I'm going to say straight 1,000 versus lefties and, like, 740 versus righties.
He had a 1,287 against lefties and 637 against righties.
God dang.
He slugged 868 against lefties. And his on base against righties was 240. Like the most dope shit ever. And my other favorite Mike Zunino thing was that every single home run he hit this year was a pull, except for the one he hit in the All-Star game.
That's awesome.
Like, what? That was the dumbest home run.
Mike Zunino, man. What a name. What a guy.
One of the best pitchers in the National League.
He got a 202 career batting average, which is so obviously, you know, batting average matters like less, but like it's still, you know.
And I love 202 is bad. The Rays, like, of all the players that, like, well, he gets a little expensive, we can't really afford him here in Tampa Bay. It's like Mike Zunino, welcome back. You know, like, it's like never in doubt. Like, he already got his, you know, contract extended or whatever.
$4 million team option. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for him.
All right, and then the last one, the National League MVP, never in doubt for Bryce Harper. obviously, Bryce Harper had a great year. I think by the end of the season, he would have been my first place vote as well. But, like, wow, what a weird year that Bryce Harper. Like, and I've said
of
this.
Of all the years for him to win.
I feel like I've said this a thousand times that Bryce Harper had the quietest MVP season that Bryce Harper could possibly have.
Yeah. It tickles me as a Braves fan that they almost I was almost rooting for Wheeler to win Cy Young so that they had Bryce Harper and Zach Wheeler and then still missed the playoffs.
Which basically also, really, by the way, is basically what happened to the Blue Jays, who had the Cy Young and the second and third place
and
MVP
third
finishers
place, yeah.
And also missed the playoffs.
How in the world?
Just cruel.
Yeah, so I would have gone Harper too. I've made a case against Juan Soto, not because I don't like Juan Soto, but the biggest part of his season came when literally every at bat he made did not matter. And I don't think it's like a damning evidence or anything, but like if things are as close as they are, I'd rather have a guy that was in more meaningful baseball in general. You know what I mean? If someone, if Juan was like 20% better than Bryce Harper, sure, but he wasn't.
Right.
You know what I mean? His walk rate was freaking crazy. He had a great year. Like, he didn't hit like 60 home runs. You know what I mean? Like, he was probably the best hitter in the National League, but since that's a probably, I don't like the look at his on base, Bryce Harper, you know, like versus Bryce Harper. It's like, yeah, like I wouldn't pitch to Juan Soto either. You know what I mean?
I also would walk Juan Soto when the guy hitting behind him is the corpse of Ryan Zimmerman. Is he even still on Thomas? Bell. Like, who was batting behind him? Josh Bell?
Well, Lane Thomas was their leadoff hitter. I know you're happy for that. So I saw the Nationals for the Braves. I think it was Josh Bell.
That's who I would guess. It's like, okay, cool. Yeah. If I'm pitching around Juan Soto to get to Josh Bell, I think that's fine. I'd rather
like
do that.
Some Yadiel Hernandez in there, some Carter Kieboom in there, some Riley. Juan Soto is going to win MVP at some point. It's just a matter of when. Like, we're fine. Let's wait until Juan Soto has a full year of him just crushing everyone's soul until we have to like bang the table to get him an MVP, because I think his time will come. You know what I mean?
Yeah. By the way, Bell was 98 games batting fourth for that lineup, and Schwarber 26, and Zimmerman also 26. So most of the time batting behind Soto was either Bell or Zimmerman.
Yeah,
especially that back half of the season.
Bell was like fine, but he was the second best hitter in that lineup, and that is not a good thing.
Yeah,
that is not a really great compliment to Josh Bell.
Fernando Tatis Jr., who seemed well on track until. Yeah. You know, it's the injuries and also the Padres collapse. What do you think had a bigger impact on Tatis not finishing, even in second place? Do you think it was the injuries, or do you think it was the collapse of the Padres?
I think if the Padres made the playoffs. Yeah. The Padres were like the it team. Like, I think everyone was rooting for Tatis and the Padres, and they just collapsed, and he had his shoulder thing going on. He was like playing right field or whatever, or center field, wherever he was. And, you know, I think everyone, like, the microscope is on Tatis so much that we're like, oh, Tatis is really struggling with his defense. And like, you know, like the Giants and the Dodgers were just taking turns, you know, battering the Padres in the last couple months. So, yeah, I think there were a couple of narratives working against him again. I don't anticipate this being his last time being a MVP finalist or being a front runner. Yeah. I would have, you know, had him and Acuna probably right at the top had those injuries not happened to them. You know what I mean? So I think third or fourth would have been good for him. And I think Brandon Crawford definitely deserved, like, Crawford in turn. I think this top five is correct. It's just a matter of how you want to rearrange them. I don't think anyone else deserved to break into that top five.
Crawford with four first place votes, including one from Scott Miller, San Diego writer, and one from Rick Hummel, St. Louis writer. Rick Hummel notoriously with not great MVP votes for the last couple of years.
Like, listen, I think Brandon Crawford, like, I wouldn't have had him first, but like, I might have considered him like third. Like, he had the best season of his career offensively by like a mile. And like, his defense, like, I get to watch a lot of Dodgers and Giants because of my work schedule, and I'm up usually later at night on the East Coast. Man, like, he killed it. Like, he deserved, like, he was the best shortstop in the National League offensively, or like, he was second best offensively behind Tatis, and he was like very clearly the best defensively. I guess Turner, like, he was one of the top three. I forget how good Trey Turner is all the time. I think Trey Turner was basically just hurt by having to play for the Nationals for a while.
I didn't realize that Andrew Baggerly's Lamont Wade Jr. vote precluded him from voting for Buster Posey. He voted for Lamont Wade over Posey, which
aggravated me reading that. Yeah, a lot. Like, that was a really annoying column because I saw the Lamont Wade thing and I'm like, oh, I'm sure he did this just to make this into some shitty column on The Athletic. And lo and behold, it's like 1,000 words about. And like I said, I didn't even disagree with like the concept of Brandon Crawford, best player in the National League, because he might have been. But like, you know, it's like 1,000 words of like, I like the way he plays, but I'm not racist. And then like Lamont Wade his mom loves him. So that place, it's like, Jesus Christ. Sorry.
Also, some other down ballot votes for Paul Goldschmidt, Austin Riley, Tyler O'Neill, Freddie Freeman, Max Muncy, Brian Reynolds, Nick Castellanos, Ozzy Albies, Max Scherzer, Corbin Burns.
I think Max Muncy probably should have been higher than a few of these guys. I probably would have had him like sixth. But overall, I think this is mostly apt.
Yeah, gonna obviously be on my Cardinals bias here as usual. Paul Goldschmidt had a quietly very good year too. I don't think he deserved to be MVP, you know, but like he deserved to be in the top six here.
Oh yeah, he was great. He was also hot at like the exact time. Yeah, like yeah, Goldschmidt, Riley, Freeman, like Brian Reynolds being on a bad team but having a great season. Like all these guys had really great seasons. So
yeah,
no problem there. I wouldn't have had them in the top five, but they're all fine with there.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, probably bias showing here, but I probably think Goldschmidt could have cracked the top five reasonably.
Who would you take out, though? I guess that's the question.
That is a good question.
Because I'm a huge Trey Turner fan. There's no way.
I'd say maybe Trey Turner, but you're right. It is tough. It is tough to take anybody out of the top five to put Goldschmidt in. So I get it, right?
I mean, didn't he lead the league in war? Like, National League, if you're just looking at straight-up war?
Goldschmidt or Turner?
Turner. I think he did.
Did he?
I think F4 or B4.
I would guess...
I'll check Fangraphs.
I will check baseball.
Like, so when he went to the Dodgers, he struggled a little bit with his, like, second-base defense, which I think just comes down to, like, playing a different side of the diamond and stuff, but man, like he was just deadly all freaking year. He led baseball in war, or led all MLB hitters in war, including Vlad Jr. and Bryce Harper. It was by a lot, and he obviously gets a lot of benefit from being like the elite base runner he is, you know what I mean? But you know, 142 OP or WRC plus, 328 batting average, like elite. His shortstop defense got better over time. Like right. That dude is a sick baseball player, and I'm really stunned that he didn't just
baseball reference. It was Semien Correa Soto leading Major League Baseball, and then in National League it was Soto, Tatis, Turner. So
yeah,
he was still very good.
Yeah, I think this just supports, you know, all these guys were hella good.
Yeah, hella good. Yep, for sure. All right. Anything else we have? Any other weird ballots to mention, or people who we think maybe should have gotten a down ballot vote who didn't?
I don't know.
I think it was mostly, I think, as expected. I think Corbin Burns was really the only guy who I wouldn't have predicted. Otherwise, I think it was pretty much straightforward.
Sure. I liked Harper there. Trying to think if there's anyone else notable. I think Willy Adames was a good down ballot guy just because like he was terrible and then got traded and he basically was the best hitter on the Brewers. I thought that was a good kind of nod for him getting like the little section on his baseball reference page that says MVP 23rd or whatever he was.
Like 14 or whatever, yeah.
Really annoying seeing all the Giants at the bottom. They should have just given it to Buster Posey. I don't know why Kevin Gausman is getting MVP votes. I just really don't like Kevin Gausman. Sorry, Kevin Gausman.
That Gausman vote was from a Colorado writer, Tracy Ringlesby from InsideTheSeams.com.
Kevin Gausman is from Colorado, so there you go.
Okay.
By
the way, the Ozzie... one Posey vote was from Susan Slusser, who is, you know, really good. Yeah. And then, like, obviously, the Lamont Wade Jr. vote is just...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, my final thought on the MVP is Andrew Baggerly, get off your flag.
with that all done, then I guess we're gonna take a short break and then head into the outro.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for joining, and I hope to see you again next week. Our Baseball Weekly is executive produced by Lewis, and our production administrator is Christine. The intro segment was hosted by me, Maz, and I was joined by Phil. Nime and Dylan were in segment number two with the baseball awards discussion. And as always, our theme music is composed by Chuck Lace. Our Baseball Weekly releases every Monday at about 1 a.m. Eastern Time, and we hope to see you next week and that you have a healthy and happy Thanksgiving holiday.